everyone. Please welcome Trevor Grant. He's from IBM, and he will give an exciting talk about Apache Mahout, an extendable machine learning framework for Flink and Spark.
All right, cool. Thanks for bearing with us on our little bit of technical difficulties. This is going to be fun. It was the first time I ever, like an adult, made notes for my slides and like had real good plans of what I was going to talk about. Forgot my glasses and don't have view to my notes now, so that's what I get. So this is going to be a little bit improv, and that's okay, because that's what I normally do anyway. And I'll try to stop saying but stop me in the middle if you have questions on anything, because I'm just making things up, and so make it like discussion format. So Apache Mahout, an extendable machine learning framework for Flink or Spark and others. Trevor Grant, I'm a PMC on the Apache Mahout project, PPMC on the Apache Streams Incubator project, open source evangelist for IBM. You can follow me, if everybody would please get out their phones and Twitter and retweet and take pictures of me at Rockin' Trevo. Apache email, personal blog, formerly a data scientist in media strategy and consumer packaged goods, and that's going to become painfully obvious very quick. Because this talk is about community, not code. And I apologize if you came in here thinking you were gonna learn about the new great features of Apache Mahout, but really what this talk is gonna be about, and we'll swing through some of those. But what this talk is gonna be about is a project that has a very long and rich history in machine learning and big data. It was the original machine learning on big data, and the transition periods it's had to go through as it's pivoted itself from and changed that mind share of being big data or machine learning on MapReduce to the new Mahout and the rebranding and the community problems that we've had to face. We will tangentially talk about some of these cool new features as part of the larger and richer story of what's Mahout's been all about. So no features, the new release, the examples, there's a lot of that stuff out there, but everything I just said. Brief history of the Apache Mahout project. Apache Mahout began as a sub-project of Apache Lucene in 2008. People familiar with Lucene, it's very exciting, big project. Graduated to TLP in May of 2010. February of 2014, Mahout 09 was released. Mahout 09 was the last MapReduce-focused release. Starting in 010, 09 had the seeds. People felt the change in the wind that there was going to be this shift from the MapReduce to the new engines. This is 2014. Hadoop was starting to kind of, slow down speed in favor of things like Spark were just coming around. Tez, H2O, all these exciting other new engines. And so the writing was on the wall. We've got to change engines. But to what? Well, there was a thing on the mailing list. And I wasn't even there, so I don't want to speak to it too much, but you can research it on your own. The gist of it was, though, that 09 was released, and then some patches for 09 were released, and then all of the major Hadoop vendors at the time stuck on 09+. And that was good and bad. People remember Apache Mahout, they download their Cloudera, they download their Hortonworks, they download their whatever, and they see Apache Mahout. And they think, 09, released in 2014, and it's now 2016? Must be a dead project, interesting. And that's it. Blogs and tutorials, still talking about, the internet's full of a lot of documentation and buzz around Mahout from the heydays. You search Google now and you're still hitting blogs, high search relevant blogs of posts from 2014, 2013. Blogs and tutorials, the current Amazon will track with the current version of Mahout, but the blogs they have on it and the tutorials are still the old MapReduce stuff. And this has been something we've been trying, this has been a problem. So when you get into, we talk to new people and hear things like, I said, I'm a PMC on the Apache Mahout project. And they're like, that's really cool. But really, Mahout's dead, right? And it's not. But I understand why people think that, because it's this kind of weird spot we're in. They say things like, Mahout's dead, or that's really cool. Do people still do machine learning on MapReduce? Or we don't really use our MapReduce in my organization, but I think that's cool that you're a part of it, or things along that. And it drives me nuts. So my fun meme for every time I hear that. The Slack channels at work, it just never stops, man. It's always, Mahout's built for running on MapReduce. So I said at the beginning that I should have a timer up. I end up talking, the whole thing will be done in 15 minutes. I got my watch right there. I said I started off in, I was a data scientist, and specifically in marketing or media strategy. And so I didn't throw a lot of my other credos on there, but, you know, math and engineering and all of these things. But that marketing stuff's really burned into the back of my brain. And so what we have here is a marketing funnel. And we have a rebranding. And, you know, engineers and mathematicians were really great for a lot of engineering mathy things, but the creative and the marketing stuff were not. And so this has been a lot of, I'm gonna frame this whole talk in around the idea of a marketing funnel. And how many people are familiar with the idea of just marketing funnels in general? Some. Okay. So the idea of a marketing funnel is, you know, arbitrarily for any product, people become aware of your product, and then they consider maybe buying it. You're in the consideration set. Then you have people who maybe will buy or try it once, people who become regular users, and then people who become really loyal to your brand. And that's kind of, and you want to keep moving people down the funnel is the idea. You want to make the funnel bigger, and then you want to work on moving people through the funnel. And that's how I'm going to frame all of this up, which is kind of a weird thing for a tech talk, but here we are. So our first problem, high brand recognition for something we don't do anymore. Opportunity is that we do a lot of really, really cool stuff, and we've kind of flanked a lot of the other big data machine learning packages in some exciting things like the GPU processors. And so the first tactic we've taken is, okay, cool, let's not keep fighting that old fight that's kind of starting to, you know, the Spark MLibs are starting to fall off to the TensorFlows because they have the GPUs and all this cool buzzwording and branding and stuff like that. And really, we're more of a direct competitor of the TensorFlows. So let's just start there and start fighting that fight instead of fighting a slow closing market. So recently, Mahout has added GPU support. I should have added the little stack slide for this. But the gist of it is everyone's, I'm sure, at least passingly familiar with Spark. So the way that this happens on Spark, I probably should have thrown it now that I look back on it, a general what is Mahout slide now, the new Mahout. But it's linear algebra on big data. Engine neutral, we'll get into that in a minute. But case in point, if you have a Spark RDD, it wraps that as a matrix. And then we expose things like matrix operations. Now in that matrix, you do a matrix multiplication, you have that part of the matrix, that block, and it goes to the local executor. When you have GPU new and GPU enabled, it basically, it's got its bindings, it's doing its local blast operations in GPUs instead of JVMs. Which, okay, that's cool, and I mean, we can usually probably think through that pretty easy. It just dumps out of the JVM, finds a GPU, runs on it, loads it back up, lets Spark ship the data around, or whatever your distributed engine. This is a pretty exciting thing, more exciting than we realized. That's not appropriate yet. We were out at GTC doing a bunch of talks last week, and getting 8 cards together on a server is a pretty big deal. People pay a lot of money to have capacity to do that. Give me a Spark cluster of 100 nodes and 100 NVIDIA cards, and boom, I got you. There's usually about 8 GPUs on a card. Maybe 800 GPUs working together in tangent. And it's, I mean, a 100-node Spark cluster is not a really wild or crazy thing. It's going to be expensive because you're paying for a lot of GPU cards in there, but I mean, that thing's going to scream. And that's really, that's a huge, huge story to tell. When you don't have to buy the $50,000 GPU server, just for the chassis, or you know, whatever the case may be, you can just build out and you can scale to arbitrarily large. So we started working on that. Did a big push for evangelism and talks starting last fall. And we've been doing evangelism and talks, you know, kind of ongoing the last couple of years. But these are 2 slides worth of talks that we did. This is just last fall. A very big shout out and thank you to my employer, IBM. I'm a technical evangelist, and part of my job is just getting people excited about open source. And something I love to get people excited about is Apache Mahout. So boom, 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 boom. That was a big fun run through October, December. So thank you, IBM, for supporting open source software. And specifically me in this case. And then this is our spring. So spring, we've got fewer talks, but some pretty high levels. NVIDIA GTC, ApacheCon, Apache Big Data, Berlin Buzzwords, DataWorks Summit. We're hitting, it's fewer talks, but we're hitting really high impact conferences and much more impactful. You're a part of it. Congratulations. Thank you for being a part of our evangelism efforts. Blog posts. This is a kind of case in point. So we've got some blog posts. This is not an exhaustive list. We've got some that are coming out of the new stuff, and that's great because it's spreading the word on how to do stuff with the new Mahout. But I was kind of Googling around last night, and about every new one released, someone releases a brand new blog post talking about the old MapReduce stuff. This is part of the rebranding we're trying to fight when we're still getting new blog posts coming out that says Mahout is about stuff that we haven't done, MapReduce. So it is what it is, and in time, that'll hopefully start to fade out for the cool new stuff. But the struggle is real, and this is, I mean, something that, I don't know, I would assume a lot of people in here are involved in different projects, and as your project matures, it's just something, it's something to think about as your project matures, and if it has to change directions. That, like, all this great evangelism that's happening right now follows you and haunts you, which it is what it is. So we do our blogs, we do our talks, social engagement, making a big push in that. I mean, it's great doing talks, but it's better if you can push them out. And these are, again, just going back, just really like media strategy 101, basic tactics of, you know, create content, push the content, you know, reinforce the content, cross over the content. But it works. I mean, it's media strategy 101 because it's effective. And hopefully, again, all ideas, if your project's not already doing, to think about. Think about, I mean, especially, not even especially, some projects are fortunate enough to have major corporate companies that also sell them, and they spend a lot of money and hire marketing professionals to really pump up their project, and that's great and good on them. But if you're not on a project that doesn't, that has one of these things, someone in the project needs to put their marketing hat on and start thinking like, okay, there's marketing coming, especially, you know, like Mahout. We're going up TensorFlow and MXNet. Those guys both have big budgets and corporate agendas to get you onto their platform. We don't have really anything other than we'd love you to try our project out. And so we've got to think, it's like, it's, there's a bit of an us versus them. You know, it's all open source, it's all community, but this is what's going on. And even if it's not even us versus them, it's how do you just, what's marketing about? But making people aware. It's raising that awareness. Oh, wow, I really nailed it on that. I know it was not a planned time transition. So that's what we're doing on this. We're trying to raise that top part of the funnel. We want more people aware. That's what the branding and the evangelism is all about. Now, the relevant cool new features that we're able to leverage. The GPUs already talked about, and the native solvers, and the, okay, I've already hit all that. So all I got for you now is a meme, and it's not a great one. Some of these I did very late. Thank you. Pity laugh. Other killer new features we've got. The GPU is a huge story. A huge story. We've been doing some work. We have a new committer who came out, who is from NVIDIA, and a lot of interest from NVIDIA in this project because we can help them sell more GPUs. They would love to sell you 100 GPUs, and, you know, Tesla 1K100 or whatever the heck they are to put in your 100 node Spark cluster. That's just A-OK as far as they're concerned. And so they're really, that's cool. We've got them starting to kind of help us out a bit, and we'll be doing some blogs with them. But we've also got other really exciting features too. Algorithm framework. So Mahout has been linear algebra on big data. This is also kind of a hard sell because a lot of us computer nerds really just want a bag of algorithm. We like sklearn. I just pick something out. Okay, I understand the programming interface. Magic. It's done. Okay, answer. I assume it's right. It's usually, maybe, hopefully, we understand the algorithms a little deeper than that, but it's whatever. It's pre-canned algorithms. We pull an algorithm out of the bag. That's okay. sklearn is a really, really deep and rich library for these machine learning things. SparkMLlib is not so much. That's why we had TensorFlow and MXNet rise up. When you, it's great if you've got, you know, if the thing you need is one of like the 15 pre-canned algorithms they have, but those are not extensible frameworks. It's very difficult to implement brand new algorithms in these things. TensorFlow makes it easy. Mohoop makes it easy as well. We are all about rolling your own algorithms. So we provide matrix operations, blast-like operations on distributed data sets, and solvers and matrix decomposition, and truly distributed matrix decompositions on distributed data sets. And this is the killer feature, because that it makes it so, you know, you open up a, you read a journal article on Monday, you spend Monday afternoon thinking about it and kind of grokking how the new, this algorithm that you just read about works. Spend maybe Tuesday morning, a little into Tuesday afternoon, implementing it in a distributed setting. Write some unit tests, close out the day Tuesday, kind of write some docs up Wednesday morning. Boom, you've gone from academic journal article that was published on Monday to in production distributed algorithm on Wednesday afternoon. And that's the pipeline. That's the really, that's a huge, huge killer story. In Scala, so you can import it to all your Java. You can import it in Java, you can use it in Scala. Much more production friendly. There's that. Zeppelin integration. Data scientists like this interactive environment where you can visualize things. Scala, not a great, I'm jumping ahead of myself, but Scala is not a known for its visualization packages compared to like R and Python, which are written for these kind of things. With Zeppelin, you can use, there's kind of a, it's not 100% undocumented, but not super toted feature. You can hand variables off between interpreters. So I can do my analytics in Scala in Mohoop, and I can just hand the data frame off into R and do, and just use ggplot2 for plotting, because why do we need to reinvent the wheel? Let's use these beautiful statistics-oriented plotting features in this language, that's what they're all about. And I already talked about Samsara. So that's hopefully opening up our consideration. You know, yes?
You get any sort of CUDA interfaces for Mohoop?
Yes. The question was, do we have CUDA interfaces for Mohoop? And we, the current GPU packages, the libraries, everything in Mohoop is modular. You can plug in any engine if you can write bindings for whatever you want. We have some off the shelf. Same is true for the native solvers, as we call them. Currently in the trunk, we have the NSCL and OpenMP. There is an active pull request going on with the aforementioned new committer we have from NVIDIA and the other person who's kind of spearheaded this project. And they are working on the JCUDA bindings. They've got them kind of prototyped out. I think they're working on the dense right now, but they are functional at the moment. They're just not, we had GTC last week. Everybody had to get all ready for it. And so we kind of, everyone stopped working for on code for about a week and a half. Coming soon. Good question. Thank you. Again, anybody, feel free anytime.
Are your slides available?
They should be. I haven't. They said if I didn't upload them by May 2nd, they'd cancel my talk. And I didn't upload. I didn't even make them until Saturday night. But here I am talking, so I'll try to upload them this afternoon. New image. All right. So this is, if anybody's been to the Mohoop website recently, is our beautiful website. I realized, because I was, for whatever reason, just reading old board reports, I was reading old release notes. This website was launched as part of the 09, the last MapReduce package, is when they laid all this out and did those. So we have lots of MapReduce basics, and it's like mainly about half MapReduce, and then if you dig through the menus a little bit, it gets into a little bit of the linear algebra. So people, you know, I tell you guys all about how great Mohoop is, and you're like, all right, that's cool, I'll go check it out. And then you know, after the conference, you go hit the website, and that's what we want. And you look at it, and you're like, I don't know, man, this looks like MapReduce to me. I'm not sure what that dude was talking about. And that's fair. So we've got a problem. Now we've made people aware, and they've got them considering the product, and they go to download, and they're like, and there's no tutorials. The tutorials are all MapReduce based. Everything's still totally geared and aligned for MapReduce. And this is a problem, because really, websites are easy to make. No, that's not gonna land. Okay. websites are technically easy. Jekyll Bootstrap, there's a lot of great, but that's kind of what a lot of projects are using right now. I feel like Jekyll Bootstrap is the modern cool one. Easy to make, hard to design. especially when you got a project full of math nerds. It is not easy. So we made Jekyll Bootstrap. New first time contributor comes in, shows up on the scene with a frame out for Jekyll Bootstrap for us, which was awesome. He got the old site kind of quasi moved over, and I told him when we were working together, like, don't try to boil the ocean. Don't try to figure out where everything goes. It's your first time contributing to the project. If you can get the framework set, let like PMCs, people who've been around on the project, we'll figure out what content needs to get migrated, because there's a huge like shuffling that needs to go on. And he did. So we did that. We were not going to launch the site. We didn't even have a front page done. And then somebody did it accidentally at 3 a.m., did launch the site. So we had, it was a mess. I stayed up to like 4, like, it's crazy. But we left the old docs, and this is what they look like. And the short answer to the story, this looks much more like a modern website that you would expect of an Apache project. We've got tutorials, we've got our algorithms, everything's lined out. Look at the old Mahout website is still up. If you get a chance, go check it out and just like take a look at it and be like, where is this? He was not kidding. This is MapReduce crazy. But there's a link kind of in there to go to the docs. And it's much, much nicer. And it's what you'd expect. It's not even it's weird. I'm sitting here bragging about what really ought to be table stakes for any project. But it was something we had to do. New image, logos. Like websites, logos are hard for math to come up with. No one has a good idea. They just know they don't like the new one. So, but this is a problem too, because if you see our logo down in the bottom corner, it's a blue man riding an elephant. Well, if we're trying to get away and say we're not MapReduce anymore, but yet we've got a big yellow elephant sitting in front and center on our logo, something we need to work on. If anybody's got any designer friends who are looking to get involved with the top-level Apache project, have them join the mailing list. We have an open call for people. This is actually the thing that made the goofy website jump or accidentally launch. One of the other people who had the old CMS access, he tried switching out the logo just as a joke for the night, but because the new website was in staging, it just kicked the entire thing over. And I got a text message, and like, I wasn't late. I mean, I've been kind of out drinking, having a couple beers. You know, it's Friday and it's Saturday night, and like about 1 a.m, like, shit, websites. I was running. I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh no. And I'm like, it was a real buzzkill, let me tell you.
I mean, isn't the name itself actually tied to elephant? So, I mean,
valid. And this has been, there's lots of threads on the question wasn't, isn't the name itself tied to the elephant? Because a Mahout isn't as an elephant rider. Yes. And we talked about like, maybe we need to change the name. Changing the name of something, really, we do have some positive name brand recognition. People know that Mahout is machine learning and data. And if you change the name and the logo, at that point, you've kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater, and we talked about that. Now, the other cool thing, apparently, that Mahout or Mahout or however you pronounce, in Hebrew, I think, also means something along the lines of essence or truth. And so we kind of got a freebie. We just need to like reassociate the name, and apparently the name is still somewhat, you know, because it's math, and that was a very lucky break. and yeah, I don't know the exact origin. Someone on one of the old PMC chairs had brought that up. That was, I think, the kind of like, everyone's like, I don't know. It was like, you know, tough debate. I'm like, okay, it's got this alternate meaning. We can just kind of start pivoting and saying, that's what it means. That's what we might have meant all along.
If you did rename it, you would lose your position in Apache Software Foundation, or does it consider it the same project?
If we rename it, does it change our position in the Apache Software Foundation, was the question. Not that I know. Would Tachyon rename itself to Alexio?
Yeah.
I don't know if that happened as they were coming out of the incubator, but they did it. I mean, you're still TLP. But even then, like, case in point, Tachyon to Alexio, that was like, they're a brand new project. They didn't even have that much name brand recognition. It took me like 6 months to figure out, like, what the hell? It just seems like Tachyon. I'm like, after a while, I'm like, oh, it is Tachyon. That makes more sense. They're having a hard time rebranding. But it's a really good case in point of like, it's a non-trivial thing, even for a new project, to just shift gears. You know, you lose a lot, or it takes people a long time to figure things out.
Tachyon is not the Apache top level project.
What's up?
Tachyon is not the Apache top level project.
But it was Tachyon changed his name to Alluxio, right?
Yeah, it did, but
are they still not TLP? Oh, okay, see, and so yeah, it's not, it's even smaller and they're still having like, it's a rough, it's the point was the Tachyon's not, is it, it's, but it's Alluxio now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tachyon slash Alluxio are not top level projects, they are incubators, and it is a good point that I was not aware of. Zeppelin integration I talked about a little bit ago, but I'll just kind of do a drive-by on it. This green matrix, there's a function to like just create a Gaussian matrix, and we took the Gaussian matrix, created it, sampled it, handed it off to R, boom. It's real simple and easy. There's the tutorial on the website to do it. But again, if you're gonna be doing interactive data science, because that has become the standard, you need to have something where you can just do a handy, you can, okay, I wanna do something, I wanna visualize it. I wanna do something, I wanna visualize it. Be nicer to have it a little tighter integrated, but limited resources and all of the plotting types of software in Scala or in R will never, all the plotting software in Scala will never hold a candle to like basic functionality in R's plotting suite, because that's what it was built to do, and that's fair. So I'm a big believer in following this route.
So there's no sort of Python integration
With Mahout? Not at the moment, but everything Mahout's very modular. I don't have it. I will get into like the language pretty soon, but there's a Scala DSL that makes that like real mathematic expressiveness, and kind of had played thought exercises a couple times, and we've definitely played with the idea of Python bindings. It would make intuitive sense for Mahout, in the same way that Spark uses like pandas data frames as like its front end and has all those things, Mahout would be like NumPy matrices, I think, and it would make reasonable sense. But at the moment, you are correct, there are not actively bindings. But
what about going to Arrow or something like that, so you can use cross language? Arrow would then be able to push also down to Parquet.
You know, someone was on one of the other, the former project Arrow was talking about that. The first question was, what about Python? There's no Python bindings. The second one was about pushing to Arrow, and then which would work down for Parquet. The old project chair had talked about that. It never really materialized anything, but it's definitely an idea that, kind of shoring up that, because really the Zeppelin thing was huge, not only because it works, it's interactive, a ton of people use Zeppelin, and now there's a little Zeppelin Mahout, you know, intro to Mahout tutorial, which also kind of helps with our awareness angle. But it was it's not the perfect, it's not necessarily the right for every case. I do definitely remember the Arrow thing. I think it's 100% there's something to it. Are you on the Arrow project? Do you know a lot about
it? I'm not on the Arrow project. I've worked with CodeMates, but
you should join Dev. Maybe you could push the Arrow integration. It's a good idea. It's no one's pursued it yet, but I think it is definitely some validity there. The install's kind of wonky if you actually get into this. Zeppelin ships with Spark 2.1, Scala 2.11. Mahout will build for it, but doesn't have binaries on the 0.13 release. So you end up in a situation where you either have to build Mahout for Zeppelin or build Zeppelin. You have to either build Mahout for Spark 2.1 or build Zeppelin for Spark 1.6. It's kind of it's a weird thing that you land into. We're hopefully next week or two releasing, because everything builds right. We just need profiles and release binaries. So that's gonna be the next one. And then that integration is gonna be nice and tight. Because right now, if you open up the Mahout tutorial, all it does is give you a broken thing, unless you just happen to be running Spark 1.6. It's not creating a great user experience and probably doing more harm than good at the moment, but there it is. And it's fun to integrate with ASF products. And it counts as increasing our download. Moving on down the funnel, the mathematically expressive DSL. Your data scientists, your big super mathy geeks, might not be Scala experts out of the gate. Probably know R, maybe some Python. Scala's a more hard engineering kind of language, in my experience, it just as far as who uses what these days. So we create a mathematically expressive Scala DSL. This is all Scala code I can't see it super easy, but it's Scala code for like with Spark bindings. You wrap your Spark context, you wrap your RDDs to create matrices out of them, and then A transpose times A plus A times B transpose. This is very, again, this is what I was saying earlier on the NuMPy bindings. And the way that works kind of under the hood is Mahout will take that kind of language, that DSL, and it converts it into operators. And those operators, like A transpose times self, those are what are defined by the engine. So really, the only thing that would take to do like an A transpose, blah, 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 whatever, is you would just need to bind to those operators and do it in Python. So it's a very, very doable thing that, again, no one has just gotten around to. But
can you, I don't know much about Spark.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit as to why you're using them together? I thought they were sort of separate, if there's a machine learning.
Yeah, so the question was, why are you using Spark and Mahout together? I thought that they were separate. The Spark's MLlib and Mahout, I wouldn't even call them competitors at this point. One does some things, kind of a small set of algorithms optimized for Spark. The other is a wide set of linear algebra stuff that is abstracted, though. And so the other big thing that Mahout does that was especially important if you already lived through one engine dying, don't want to have this happen again, let's be engine neutral. I'm going to jump into that in a minute. But the engine neutrality means those operators that you define in Spark, we also have a set, we have those operators defined for H2O or defined for Flink. You can define them for anything you want. If you have Postgres and you know what your tables are going to look like, you just need to define, okay, how would I do an A transpose times self BLAS operation in Postgres? And it's kind of a tricky thing doing BLAS operations on like huge SQL tables, and I'm not 100% sure that this would be wise. But the point is, no matter what engine you have, you plug that in, and then you hand off like, okay, here's some BLAS operations. You hand those to an engine specialist. And while they're not super straightforward, they're pretty well documented. A matrix A times matrix transpose. You know, like it's a small subset of like matrix algebra. It's a big data problem, but they're very well understood mathematically. So you give that to your platform specialist to like figure out how to implement, you know, if you want some weird different binding backend, they figure those things out. Your, you know, math, PhD, neurochemistry, biophysics, rockets, writes these crazy algorithms, but it's totally abstracted across. So they write their algorithms in a very mathematically expressive way that are very easy to read, easy to follow. And then all they have to do to run on a different engine is you just swap out the bindings. Oh, I've been developing on Spark because that's what we had. Oh, good. The data sets are ready for the whatever new bindings we got. Okay, we just swap out our import, new bindings. Algorithms move right across. Same code, same Mahout code currently runs Flink on Spark and H2O if you're using H2O. So it just boom, 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 carries right across. And that's a really, really exciting thing because it's a pain to port algorithms, and 99% of the time it's not going to work perfectly anyway because things are implemented different, or things are a little weird here, or things are a little different there. You're trying to read some crazy math written by someone who was so genius that they're borderline insane 6 years ago, and no one's heard from them since like, you know, 2012, and you're reading through this, but like it's an important business process, like we gotta figure out, it's gotta work somehow. So you just try to kind of go through and hope everything works out, and it's a big thing. And that's why I'm like, yeah, it sounds pretty tedious figuring out how to like write transpose times self on an entire engine, but this is, in practice, a much simpler thing to do than going through like this whole huge bank of old production algorithms you have. At least that is my assertion. So the other big thing that if you notice on this is very mathematically expressive, and I've got lots of gripes about TensorFlow, and I think it's overhyped, and it's really just a project to get you onto Google's platform. Oh, sorry.
Well, I had a question.
Yes.
You talked about GPU support, and there are some trade-off between independence of platform. You have to implement a native GPU.
On each platform?
Yeah.
So the question was, okay, that's cool. You have native solvers, you have engine neutrality, but then your native solvers you have to re-implement on each platform. And the answer is, you don't. as long as you've got a JVM-based language like Scala or Flink. H2O has its, it depends how you write your bindings too. But as long as you write your bindings with some sort of Java thing, the way it works in short is because we have Mahout vectors and Mahout matrices that are the in-core versions, and the operations defined on those. So when you take a Mahout matrix times a Mahout vector, they have their own BLAS operations that are defined by either the JVM solver, the CPU, multi-threaded CPU solver, or a GPU solver. So as long as you have that binding, the way that those two matrices are defined, then it works. It basically works for everything.
Yeah,
it
but goes. On the bottom you have some cubicle or some.
It does. And how does that work?
And this is part of.
Yeah, it is. The CUDA code is part of Mahout as well. And so yeah, it's Mahout has its own implementation of vector and matrix, and it's the instructions on how to multiply those that contains the CUDA code or the whatever other software. It's also Python. The beautiful part about Python is it's so expressive. Except Google, for whatever reason, makes Python like uglier and more like wordy than Java, and it drives me nuts. It took like this, like, oh, it's so fun. I just import all the answers, and like 7 lines of code later, I've got a web server running or whatever. And then yeah, Google somehow makes it like, oh no, we're gonna have like methods on methods on methods for days, and it looks ugly and it's crazy. Yeah, we're more math. It's more mathematically expressive than the Python, which is strange to me. So I was gonna put a Venn diagram in here, and I forgot. So imagine, if you will, a Venn diagram of if we're writing like advanced algorithms, we're adding new algorithms into our framework, our pre-canned. So we've got all these mathematically expressive language, but we want some pre-canned algorithms for people just to like download and just have something work, like, you know, k-means, ordinary like regression, stuff everyone uses. Everyone shouldn't like have to reinvent the wheel every time. Well, when you start k-means and order like just regular regression, pretty easy breezy. A lot of people are familiar with the algorithm. You start getting these crazy esoteric algorithms. They're very kind of difficult to follow, sort of a heady thing to wrap your mind around in the first place. And then you've got all this code. Well, because we have such a mathematically expressive language, it makes it really easy, not only for the people to write the code and not feel bad about contributing it, but then for someone to come in and do a pull request review. Because you can like, okay, I still maybe got to spend like a couple hours reading through and seeing what it is that this algorithm does, but I can follow this now and I'd be in a much, much easier way. Like, yes, this seems to be doing what this paper says. You obviously always check it with examples and unit tests, but that makes it a lot easier for us. A big reason why we believe the engine neutrality, there's a part, I maybe should organize this a little better. There's gonna be a big part where we're trying to build up our core pre-canned algorithm, similar to like the CRAN has done. You know, we want people just to contribute. We're a lot of user contribution for our algorithms and build out like just a nice set of off-the-shelf algorithms. But a big part of being able to do that is you have to have a framework where it makes it easy to read these algorithms and make it review, because there's a small set of people who understand the math enough to do it, smaller set when you consider how many people can and will write the code, and even smaller set when you've got to figure, okay, somebody else now has to review it and like and things like that. So the engine neutrality, I think we've kind of hit this a little bit first. So I will skim through. We don't have beam bindings yet, but the idea is everything. Oh, sorry, I'm in the way. You have everybody's moving towards this like abstraction paradigm. You know, you want it for the same reason, for reasonable reasons. And so, yeah, we've talked about writing beam bindings too, and just abstract your abstraction because it's absolutely silly. The algorithm framework that I wanted to get into: small pool for qualified contributors, mathematically expressive Scala. The last part of this that makes it hard, if you are our target user, if you think about it, who knows some R, okay, they can boot up the Scala shell, they can boot up some Zeppelin, they can do a little math. But then when it comes to contributing the algorithm back, you've got, okay, we still are dealing with classes and packages and stuff like that. So the best we could do is create a template and a very, very robust tutorial. But this is about all you have to do. You throw a little bit of your math up in there, you throw a little bit like the fitter up in there, and it's pretty easy to drop. I think I dropped canopy clustering in like 3 hours one afternoon. It's a pretty easy thing to, I mean, I obviously know the language very well, but it's like, I can't overemphasize enough how easy it is to drop things in, and the most probably tedious part of it is writing docs and writing algorithms, as you will anytime you're programming anything, I'm afraid. So, and we also encourage people to use dev, encourage them to pay it forward, and it's working. We've got currently a Google Summer of Code project for DBScan and some optimized DBScan, which is supposed to run a lot faster. New contributor thrown in that regression F-test. So we do closed form linear regression, not stochastic gradient descent at the moment. And the key difference there is if you use R and you do a linear regression, you have like your t-statistics and your p-values and this and that. You've got to do an XTX operation there in the middle to get your variance-covariance matrix. I mean, who does that in the middle? A little slower than a stochastic gradient descent, but it's closed-form regression. And so now all of a sudden we start looking at things like, okay, well, what's our F-test? What's our T-test? We're looking at, we're getting real statistics. We're not doing big data machine learning anymore. I'm like, nah, man, we're just doing statistics at scale, which isn't this buzzwordy, but significantly more useful because you got plenty of statisticians who understand all these things, and like, there's important things like variable significance. You're not just firing a bunch of data at some crazy machine learning algorithm. Machine learning has its place too, but it shouldn't just always be like the first thing you go to. There's statistics exist for a reason. And we also have k-means classification in flight. So it's exciting. You know, we're still finishing out, like putting the final touches on the algorithms framework. It's in the trunk. It was officially 0.13.0. And we're already starting to reap benefits of getting new algorithms thrown in and things like that. So it's pretty exciting. Historically, how this actually worked: first, we did the Scala mathematically, just the Scala and the engine neutrality. Then people have been doing all the talks with a big spike coming starting probably last year. Ongoing was the website reboots and things are consideration. Sure, label these slides better. Too bad. Okay, what's next? We're building this algorithms framework, trying to build up a huge collection of algorithms, and highly encouraging. So my big call to action is probably a lot of math folks in here, and I would love to, you know, tell your friends, tell your math friends, tell your grad student buddies, you know, jump on and contribute. Great project, especially for grad students. The field's wide open. We've got a very small set of pre-canned algorithms right now, but a lot of times you can just read R code and like, it's a pretty quick and easy port. Like the answer is there. You're reading the back of the book, you're porting an algorithm, and you can commit algorithms to top level projects. So really exciting stuff. And yeah, that's the big part of the evangelism right now. We're hoping to have like a full blown out algorithms framework with a nice collection of algorithms by 0.14.0. More work on GPUs. Currently, the GPU native solvers, when you do it, you will get Spark. The Spark will use one GPU. No matter how many are available, it will use one GPU per executor. And we want to be able to change that so that it will use, you know, you might have 8 GPUs per card or 16 if you've got 2 cards. We want to be able to leverage all of them. This is more of a kind of a technical thing. Again, the guy who like wrote a big part of the, thanks, wrote a big part of the, like, the new CUDA release binding, like the new CUDA API or whatever they just called out last week, is helping us out. So it's just kind of going through that. And so that will be coming soon. Oh, fun little call out. So we did a quick kind of back of it hip shot benchmark with on a Spark cluster with the GPU acceleration, even though it was only single GPU, 30% boost in, that's wrong. That is way wrong. It went from like 30 milliseconds to like 3 milliseconds or 1 millisecond. It was bigger than that. This undersells it, I feel like. Any rate, you get huge speed ups when you start doing sparse multiplication on GPUs. More engine bindings. We want to really sell out that feature. That engine neutrality is a big feature, and other big things are coming up. You got MPI, you've got Flink streaming. Lots of, so probably want to get another engine binding in the trunk, just if for no other reason, to have a tutorial and talk people through writing their own bindings. Conclusion, Mahout has been kind of lying low. Awakening is probably the wrong word. but it's been quiet. And now we've got a lot of really, really cool features and all the pieces are in place and things are really starting to rumble. It's a really, really exciting time to be a part of the project. So go tell your friends, tweet about us, write a blog, download, start playing, work through some of our blogs and tutorials, make fun memes, join the mailing lists, and contribute algorithms. I got about four minutes left, so questions.
Is that a Mogwai on your shirt drinking coffee?
This is a Mogwai on my shirt drinking coffee, yes. If you're ever in Chicago, I recommend Wormhole Cafe. It's a fun little coffee shop in Winter Park. They got a DeLorean hanging on the roof.
Nice.
Yes?
Is there some option to hybrid computation to use the, if you execute on a GPU, you can also execute on a CPU as well on the same node, or is this exclusively used?
The question is it a way to hybrid the GPUs and CPUs? I didn't write the whole part. I would imagine so with VNSCL. Currently what it does is if the GPUs aren't available, it falls back to the CPUs. I think this problem will get solved along with the multiple CUDA thing. It's more of a question of how do you, okay, now that we've dumped out of the JVM, how do we do traffic control on where we're sending things to solve? So that would be my guess.
There may be some best fit selection there too.
And yeah, and in the same way we do optimizers on the distributed engine, like we don't just take and like say, okay, you said do this, so probably is a good enough idea. No, we run it through some optimizers first. Like, this is really an ATA trans, you know, we try to optimize it to a, because the most expensive thing you can do on a distributed data set is an honest transpose. You don't want to do that if you go, that's a very expensive operation. So we try to optimize that and be like, okay, how can we avoid actually doing transposes and, you know, and things like that. It's part of the bindings per engine. But it's a lot of the same like problems you run into. But at any rate, when you get down to the native solver, we've got just the plugins, but everyone's been talking about the people who are like especially working on that are like, all right, we gotta do some, this cool, we got everything up and running, but there's definitely some optimizations, especially in GPUs. Okay, we've loaded into memory, but we're gonna run the same thing like 30 times. Keep it in memory. Don't keep moving it back and forth because that's killing us on latency. But at this point, we're talking about killing us on latency. Like, we can move it in and out of the GPU all day long, and we're still blowing JVM out of the water. So, even Fortran, but it could always be better. So, why not make it better? But yeah.
How does it?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, are we getting kicked out?
I
don't know. You're the moderator. You gotta go.
No, fine.
Okay. Well, yeah, keep talking.
How do you sort of deploy this on your own cluster?
How do you deploy on your own cluster?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna speak in the context of Spark. Which is most common, but if you're running like a jar, if you're doing like a Spark submit sort of thing, you just include it in your POM. If you're doing notebooks, it's however you load. Like in Zeppelin, they've got a whole like screen where you can like add jars and dependencies. Jupyter has some line magic or whatever they call it, but yeah, you're just adding it to transitive dependency, and it knows how to do all the things. And then you do the bindings wrap, but that's basically it. It's very, very easy. You don't need to like install or deploy or any manage or anything. It's just a library that piggybacks on a lot of stuff.
How do your licenses work? Like if I take this, build a product, how does that sort of work?
ASF V2, do whatever you want. I will say a lot of the development that has happened on Mahout, I think has been in forks that have been donated. Things have been, you know, just people, you know, kind of doing their own thing with it and like kicking back in. I wouldn't say a lot, but there's been some. We're definitely in production in a lot of places. And it's okay. Oh, you said we have plenty of time. All right. No, that was a good place for me to shut up. All right. Anyway, thanks everyone for coming out. I'll be available.